So what I'm trying to convey is this idea that there can be this place of stability, and then one of the characteristics of this inner stability is knowing. And it's very much different than often a common tendency of the human mind is to be caught somehow or engaged or resisting or somehow entangled with the world that's always changing, the changing experience, whether it's changing experience within or without. And some of it doesn't change very fast. Some things persist for a long time, but still we're engaged in it. And there's a qualitative difference between being entangled, wrapped up in whatever's happening, and stepping back, in a sense, and being the one who knows, being the knower, who sees it, is aware of it. And it's a very interesting, I think, area of investigation in practice, is to investigate. Well, it's said this way, through a question. And the question is, where do you live? Where do you live? Where does your mind, your awareness, your thoughts, your intentions, your concerns, where do they usually abide? Now, some people usually, you know, where they really abide is in their thoughts. They live in their thoughts, they're negotiating their thoughts, they're thinking and planning and wondering and fantasizing. And somehow the mind is kind of in the world of their thoughts. Certain occupations are thoughts, you know, occupations that require a lot of thinking. And kind of that's where the mind can go. You can kind of lose track of time, lose track of the world around you, lose track of your body, because you're kind of in this world of thinking that you're so engaged in figuring things out. Or a person can be really worried about, you know, they have some important event that's going to happen in the next few days. And so there's a lot of preoccupation of the mind thinking about that event, planning it. Or there can be past events, conversations that happened that maybe happened in ways that weren't very nice. And so you're reviewing of them, reliving them, redoing them, coming up with better responses. And the mind, you're kind of living it. It's so much that sometimes you can kind of lose yourself. I mean, in extreme forms, you become absent-minded, or people, you know, you hardly notice other people because you're kind of so involved in this inner world. Sometimes people get entangled with their feelings, their emotions. That's kind of the way in which they kind of negotiate the world, is through their emotions. And so that's where they live, in their emotional being, their emotional body. And so, or sometimes it's in their, people live in their physical body around comfort and discomfort. And everything's being negotiated to their comfort and discomfort. Some people, the place they live most of the time, where they kind of is in their relationships. They're always relating. You know, always in the world of relationships. How does this relate? How am I relating to someone else? How are they relating to me? How do I get this relationship established? How do I find a better relationship? How do I find balance in the relationship? It's all about relationships. And that's where people live. And when you do mindfulness meditation, mindfulness practice, in a sense, what we're trying to do is take up living quarters in some place else. We're taking up... We're trying to live in the knowing. So that a center of gravity, the center of beingness, a sense of presence, in a kind of a very imprecise way, where so our sense of self is not connected to thoughts, feelings, body, relationships, but it's, our sense of self is connected to this place that knows. And this place of knows is qualitatively different than anything that is known. There's what's known, and there's that which knows. And it's interesting to, if some of you had the experience of being on the edge between these two worlds, the edge between being entangled and then not being entangled, but actually kind of knowing, oh, this is what's going on now. It's going on now. And sometimes you can pull yourself out for a moment. Oh, I'm thinking. You clearly know you're thinking. And then you can sometimes feel the gravitational force or the pull back into the world of thinking. And sometimes the pull back in can be come along with all kinds of beliefs, both conscious and semi-conscious or unconscious. Beliefs that, oh, this is the world that really counts. This is where I'm really going to fix my problems. This is really important. This is, you know, where I'm comfortable. This is where I'm familiar. And so there's a strong pull back in to, you know, being living in thoughts, living in feelings, living in all these places. And so then if you step back, sometimes you can feel there's kind of a, at least for me sometimes, kind of a, there's a kind of a tension between, you know, oh, you know, I know it's healthier for me. I know it's better to kind of come to a peaceful place where there's knowing. But there's this pull back in, or this pressure to go back in to be entangled. And you know, watch that. It's very interesting to watch that. And it's very interesting to watch and study. What is it? What's the difference between those two? Physiologically, what's the difference between those two? Sometimes people report that when they get pulled up into the world of thoughts again, that sometimes they feel disconnected to their body, or the sense of where their vitality or energy in their body shifts and changes, or sometimes the tension in the body will shift and change, that as people get entangled or caught up in the world of thinking again, the body tightens up. Same thing with emotions. We're kind of resisting, holding on to, reacting to emotions. There can be also shifts and changes in how we feel in our body. But when we're able to kind of relax and be in that still place, the quiet place of knowing, then the sense of the body changes a lot. And so it's interesting to study, you know, what's the difference between it? What's the difference in the mind? Is the mind more at ease one way? Is it more tense one way? What's going on in the mind? How does the mind feel? And so that investigation, what is this going on? How is it like? Is it, I think, a very useful one, to see the contrast. And the investigation itself is, as you strengthen it, becomes a little bit more moving into the direction of living in the knowing. Living with, oh, knowing. Knowing what's going on. Now, one of the interesting things that happens as we start living in the knowing more, knowing what's going on, noticing, being mindful of what's going on, is that slowly, perhaps over time, a person who practices mindfulness learns to begin to know everything that goes on. So whatever goes on, whatever experience you can have as a human being becomes an object of knowing. So no matter what, I remember how happy I felt when I realized in my mindfulness meditation that any experience that I could have, in theory, I could be mindful of. And that made me so happy. Because then I knew, at least, you know, I knew that I could, in theory, be free, liberated or free, in any experience that I was having, anything that was going on. Because when you move back into the knowing and mindful, it's a place of freedom, of safety, of peace. It doesn't have to be dramatic. It's not like necessarily this big liberation. But there's a place of freedom in that knowing. So at some point you can begin realizing you can include everything in the field of knowing, and the knowing stays in a sense kind of can stay kind of peaceful. That place you abide in that place. Everything else is changing all around. I remember once doing a guided mindfulness meditation with a woman who was had a lot of fear, And she was a long-time Zen practitioner, so she had a fair amount of concentration, could really stay focused on things. But she never really learned mindfulness, so she never actually looked at her fear. She just, Zen, you're taught much about emotions. So I asked her to feel her fear in her body. And it was kind of new to her, so she went and felt the fear in her body. And as she focused on it, because she had the ability to be present, those sensations that were connected to fear, the contraction that was there, vanished, faded away, kind of dissolved or relaxed. And then I asked her, what happened to the fear? And she got disoriented. I said, and she opened her eyes. She was her eyes closed. She couldn't believe that it disappeared. It was like, you know, it was such a foreign idea that you could bring your attention to something and they would disappear, and she thought it was some kind of, you know, sleight of hand, or I don't know, she didn't quite trust it. But this ability to turn and bring attention to everything, no matter what. Sometimes it goes away, sometimes things stay, but even though they stay, you realize you're not living in there, you're not entangled or glued to it, but rather you're actually living in this place of stability. Have you ever been in inside your car when I went through the car wash? It can be a little like that, you know. You feel safe, you feel secure, you know, you feel dry. And it's kind of still and quiet in your car. And it's kind of like violent just outside the window. But you're not troubled by all that. It's, you know, you're not living in the water. You're not living outside in that all stuff. So you're staying in that, you know, in your car seat. So it's a little bit like that. isn't that you're shut off from the world, but it's more like the opposite. It's more like all the windows in the convertible is down as you go through the car wash, but you don't get wet anyway. It's like you're so present, you're really there. There's a sense of real presence and connectedness in that kind of knowing. But still, there's also a sense of not being caught by things. So this this tension, this midpoint, where you might have a choice to go back and forth, is a very interesting place. And that's a place to really investigate and study. What goes on there? If you can rest or stay very easily in the knowing and find some refuge there, that's nice. I'm happy for you. But it might be that one of the more interesting places in the long term is to actually notice those when you have the opportunity, the chance where you're kind of swaying back and forth, where you kind of feel you can pull yourself out a little bit from being entangled and stuff, and then you kind of see and study that force back in. What's the clinging? What's the pull? What's the beliefs? What's the emotions? What's going on? That seems to be that pull back in to be entangled again. Where do you live? So when you know, my sense of the day, you know, I told you in the beginning was, you know, there's all this people coming and going, all this change, you know, and there's stability. And I kind of felt that I was just here all day, was kind of the feeling. You know, I was, all the people came and went and I was here. But I wasn't here all day. And that's kind of an interesting, you know, that what happens is if you stay in the knowing, and everything's changing, but if you include everything in the knowing, nothing's excluded, then at some point, that which you think is yourself is taken up as an object of knowing as well. So often you have me here, and it's all the stuff that I'm encountering in the world, all the stuff I'm experiencing and relating to and all this. And some people are very good at being mindful of everything that goes on, but they're not mindful of the I, the self, that is being mindful. Now, the self that's being mindful is different than the knowing. Because the self, you know, is all these ideas, your identity, your sense of agency, your sense of, you know. And sometimes that sense of self is never questioned. And sometimes that sense of self is a problematic sense of self. And all this stuff hits it and encounters it. So at some point, as you do the mindfulness practice, we learn to kind of begin questioning, investigating, who is it that's experiencing all this stuff? And you might find things there. You might find there is anxiety in that place that you call yourself. You might find there's beliefs. You might find that there is something you're holding on to, some sense of bracing yourself against the world, or reaching out to the world, or some kind of sense of building something up or defending something. Or there's something there. Anytime you have a sense of self, an idea of self, chances are pretty good that if you turn around and look at it, you'll find something, some felt sense of something. And if you do a careful mindfulness of it, that'll also start seeing, be rising and passing, to be impermanent and changing. And then, well, then where are you? So we find out we're not always here. Like, I wasn't here all day. You're not always here, but that's terrible. I mean, you should be here, all right? That's the whole point, is to be here and present and grounded in the present moment. And this magic begins happening when you turn back and look and see, wait a minute, you don't have to believe this. You turn around and look and start seeing. You see, wait a minute, the anxiety or the emotions that I think to take myself, they're fleeting as well. They arise and pass. The thoughts that I used to build up and claim my sense of self, they're fleeting and rising and passing. The beliefs, the, you know, all, everything. Consciousness even that I thought was, that must really be who I am, is also arising and passing. So then you realize, oh, wait a minute. There's this great thing knowing that's going on. I know all these things, but even the knowing itself arises and passes with what it knows. And so there's this, the magic of this is that then you discover what I like to borrow from the etymology of the word, you discover integrity. And integrity in Latin apparently means untouchable, that which can't be touched. And to realize that there's the experiences of the world cannot touch that which is most essential in you allows you to go through the world without being threatened by it, without needing it to be a certain way, so to support and build up your idea of who you are, your sense of self. And it isn't that there is an essential self in there, it's, you know, solid to solid. It's more like you realize it's magic that as you go in and look, everything, you know, there's no place to land. To take this, to investigate this maybe from a little different angle. If you meditate, sooner or later, sometimes it's much later, you might have the experience of your thoughts calming down. And as your thinking calms down, you might become aware of gaps between your thinking, between your thoughts. And if you're aware of gaps between your thoughts, then you can ask yourself an interesting question. You can ask yourself, who are you when you're not thinking? And since you can't think to answer the question, because then you're thinking, what are you left with? Who are you when you're not thinking? You're awake, you're aware, because, you know, you haven't gone unconscious when you don't think. But and that's when you're not thinking, you're not telling yourself who you are, who are you? Maybe it's a little bit like looking out into the world with your eyes and then trying to use your eyes to look at your eyes without a mirror. You have these eyes. They function well enough. But, you know, unless you borrow a mirror, you can't see them. So, when you don't have your thoughts to tell you who you are, then who are you? You're still there. And the idea, I think, is that there's a lot of freedom, a lot of peace, a lot of ease that's found in realizing that there's more to who you are than who you tell yourself to be. That there's an alternative way of being in the world that's different than what you tell yourself is going on. And closely connected to this alternative is a simple act of knowing. There's what's known, and there's knowing there's what's going on, there's knowing what goes on. And that staying with that knowing. And trusting it. Coming back to it. And sometimes it feels like pulling yourself out of the mud because you want to stay in the, you know, entangled. And sometimes it'll feel like a lotus which grows up out of the mud and opens. And awareness is, you know, not in danger of being sullied by the mud. It's connected to the world, the mud and all that. But you kind of blossom, and awareness, the mind, is really free and independent from it. So where do you live? That's the question. You might find it interesting to walk around for a few days and keep asking yourself, where am I living right now? Where am I living? So I hope that this talk made enough sense to enough of you. Sometimes I wonder about these talks. I couldn't go down to El Camino and Sequoia Shopping Center and just start talking to people like this. So hopefully, you know, it... And if it didn't make sense, you know, you're welcome to leave it behind here. It doesn't have to go with you. And so we have a few minutes. Does anybody have any questions out of today, the practice today, or comments about the day they'd like to make?
I'm kind of new to meditation. And I realize that you have been focusing on the breathing. And I've had some moments of... kind of the quiet that comes when your thoughts kind of stop. But you talked a little bit about this woman with fear, and she started to examine things inside of her. At what point do you kind of stop focusing on your breathing and start examining? And how do you examine?
Good question. So in our school, our kind of tradition of practice, the mindfulness tradition, different teachers or different practitioners at different times will give different answers to that question. Some people will say, or some people practice a very light commitment to the breath. As soon as something else becomes more predominant, they let go of the breath and attend to that thing which is more predominant. Other people find it more useful to have a strong commitment to the breath and really kind of emphasize staying with the breath the best they can, and only if something becomes really compelling will they leave the breath and attend to something else that's going on. So there's kind of that range, you know, in how you use the breath. Some people have a light attention to the breath, some people a strong one. And it depends a little bit. You might experiment in different ways. People who are new to meditation, sometimes it's best to have a relatively strong commitment to the breath, because it's kind of hard to bring investigation to other experiences unless there's some stability first. And getting concentrated in the breath tends to bring calm and stability. And once there's enough stability, then it can be more productive to at some point open up the attention and focus on other things. Make sense?
Thank you.
It's a comment, not a question, but I normally when I come here, it's after considerable dealing with the fret and fever of the busyness of the day. It usually takes me somewhere between 15 to 20 minutes to sort of settle into the rhythm of meditation. Today I came here after hiking in the mountains and bicycling down from Skyline Boulevard to this place here, and it was only took about 5 to 10 minutes to get into it instead of the usual 15 to 20. So I take it that's probably normal. I mean, is that would be what one would expect, I suppose.
Normal that would take 5 minutes?
Well, it seemed to be much easier to get into the rhythm of pain.
Oh, because you weren't involved in your normal activities, that there were maybe a little more caught up. You're caught up. Hiking and biking is kind of much more settling and anxiety producing the same way as.
Right. It's reassuring in a way. It makes it seem like it isn't really quite as hard as it sometimes seems it is.
Oh, I'm sure that some people here in the room hearing you will say, if it only takes them 20 minutes to get into the rhythm of it, that's pretty good.
Okay. Sometimes half an hour. Okay.
Thank you, John.
I didn't have a question.
But you were given the mic.
I'd like to ask a question about your last talk as to where do I live.
A bit closer to the mouth.
To know, if we are to know where we are, or know that we know each experience in connection with thoughts, feelings, body, or whatever, isn't there going to be a time where there will be some interaction between the two? And how do we work that?
Interaction between the knowing
and... knowing and the thought, or the knowing and the feeling and the knowing and the body, whatever we are focusing on, or whatever we are, our primary focus is.
Can you give me some example of what the interaction might look like, so I can understand you?
So if I'm thinking about a problem, a work issue, and I'm there in thought trying to maneuver between what is, what could be, and then I step back and say, I know this, but I have to go back and
take it
to another step.
That relates a little bit to what we talked about in our interview today, perhaps. I think that especially initially when people are learning mindfulness practice, there can be a divide where it feels like it has to be either or. And somehow the knowing of it kind of keeps you disengaged almost from the activities of the world. I think as mindfulness gets stronger, mindfulness is something you can carry along with you. And functioning in the world continues. It doesn't stop. Thoughts, ideas, motivations, reactions, and all, it doesn't stop. But there's a very clear awareness in the midst of it while you do it. So it doesn't have to be either or, in the way I think that I understand you. And um, So with time, it becomes something that's very dynamic. And so there's kind of, some people talk about stillness in action, stillness in movement. Or they talk about, thoughts, motivations, decisions, considerations, all the things that maybe you're involved in, can still continue very actively. And you know that's what's going on. You're very present for that experience. So there's not an interaction then. It isn't like you're negotiating, the two aren't talking to each other. But the knowing happens in the midst of all the others. And I think, as I told you, I used to work at the Greens restaurant as a fast order cook. And serving all these meals, you know, and all these 200 meals, you know, over 2 hours. You know, all these waiters, all these people, kind of very fast, you know. There's sometimes I feel very, very present, very hyper alert, very still, even though there was this amazing dance, you know, the cook's dance in the kitchen, spinning around and flipping this pasta and taking out the pizzas and doing this and that. So it doesn't have to be one way or the other. The two can go together.
The fact that it doesn't have to be one way or the other is okay. How about the sense of self? How do you maneuver between it's me doing it, but no, it's just that I know it's not me doing it, but there is this interaction. It's smooth and it's efficient, but there's no sense of self.
Possible answer to your concern is that if there's suffering in the sense of self, then it warrants paying more careful attention to. If there's no suffering, if you know no suffering is obvious, maybe you don't have to. Maybe it's innocent enough. I'm the one who has the itch. I don't ask you to scratch me, or maybe if I'm hungry, I don't feed you. You know, it has some sense of this. You know, some sense of agency of a person here is a reasonable thing to have, and to operate along that is quite reasonable, but there doesn't have to be any clinging to it. And so clinging is characterized by suffering. So the emphasis here today wasn't in this knowing. But sometimes in very dynamic activity, there can be a very strong sense of knowing as well. But sometimes it's quite appropriate, I feel, to, in a sense, not have knowing be so predominant, but actually throw yourself into some activities. There are all kinds of activities in human life that are better done if you kind of just in a sense abandon yourself to it. Sports, for example, or certain enterprises, so one of the things I learned from Zen training was the value sometimes of just kind of being completely one with the activity of sweeping or chopping wood or whatever we were doing, and just kind of completely engaged. The sense of knowing was very different than what it is from the mindfulness, where there's a stillness. It's almost like you can merge with the experience, as opposed to being somehow independent of it and watching all the changing stuff. And I think that as people get more mature in practice, the hope is that they're able to kind of, in the given situation, discern what's appropriate, what's useful, and then be able to kind of be fluid, going back and forth. I don't think it's useful to cling to mindfulness. To knowing is the be-all and end-all of a spiritual life. It's just a very useful tool, strategy, for helping to discover how to be free. And when you're free, then you can be fluid.
Thank you.
Does it make sense? Is it helpful? It is. That's what I want. So that's great. So it's 9:00, and I really appreciate it a lot. Everybody comes and practices these kinds of days. I love these kinds of days. And to have a day that's, from 6 in the morning to 9 in the evening, I just love even more. I think something different can happen when you give yourself over to the whole day of doing practice like this than it is if we do it from 9 to 5 or something. I think it does something very different to the mind, to the inner life, to kind of abandon yourself, or maybe that's not the right word, but kind of give yourself over to spend a whole day practicing mindfulness, practicing meditation, where there isn't kind of the usual activities of daily life that we're used to doing at home or at work that somehow impinge on the edges of it. and so the kind of it's, you know, the day is basically bracketed by sleep. Those of you who didn't do the whole day, I'd encourage you someday to do this. Try it out, and probably for at our center, we probably won't do it again until next June, so you can warm up, get used to the idea. So thank you very much. And are we tidied up well enough? Great. So let's all go home to sleep.